Get Pucked.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Get Pucked podcast, post-draft edition. We're going to obviously dive a lot into that, but first and foremost, some very, very hot off the press news as of the time of this recording. It would appear that Filip Zadina has cleared waivers. So just quickly, Vito, would you have taken a flyer on him?
No.
Really, huh? I feel like the majority of people didn't want to. For the most part, I did see quite a few people saying, oh, it's a low risk, high reward, new scenery, kind of akin to the whole Elias Anderson sort of acquisition that they just did. I'm a little surprised, maybe not from a Habs perspective, I'm a little surprised that he cleared like just across the board. Nobody went and took a shot on this guy.
It's very telling, isn't it?
I mean, I guess, huh? So that's pretty wild. And I would imagine.
If I'm gonna add my two cents on that, on this, is that
all right, go ahead.
How many more of the same style of players do you want to have on this team? We already have too many players to begin with.
Well, that's true.
So where are you gonna fit Filip Zadina? If you're gonna just take him in with a rocket, then there's no point. Not really, anyway. If you can't fit him in your top six top six, then there's no point in even bothering, because he's not a bottom six type of player. He's based on skill. He's based on shooting, and it's just his game is, it's taking some time to find his game at the NHL level, if he ever finds it.
It's a little bit wild, I have to say. I mean, we snap back a little bit to the draft where the Habs were drafting third, and then remember, at the time, it's all fun to look back now, right? You know, everybody's talking about, oh, they passed up on Tkachuk. How could they have passed up on Tkachuk? That wasn't the guy. At the time, it was a pretty sure shot. It was going to be Zadina or it was going to be KK. That was the big topic.
Which were both mistakes.
Yeah, well, go figure, right? I mean, it's all looking back now. We can all look back and say, oh, my God. But they passed on Zadina. That was the meme, the lady with the big face. That was the meme. Like, everybody was expecting Zadina. They went with Kokkinemi. So now we go and find out that both would have probably, maybe, possibly fallen down the crapshoot the way that they actually did.
Okay, between Kokkinemi and Zadina?
You take KK, without question. Yeah.
Right? He's today, in the NHL, yes. He's playing, he's got them a long-term contract. There's a
But both shouldn't have gone third, is my point.
Correct.
Yeah, that's where I'm going with it. Okay, so just a little fun fact there. So Zadina clears. So everybody who was like, oh, another reclamation project for Gorton and Hughes. So scratch that one, guys. He's waived and cleared. Some more topics to go here. So just, again, before we get to the draft, so Elias Anderson gets picked up, a two-way contract, one-year deal. And wait, was it 1 year or 2 years?
1 year. Two-way deal.
Two-way, one-year deal. Right. This is a guy, again, most people probably know this by now, but for the odd chance that someone's listening and they don't know this, this is a former seventh-round overall pick.
First-round seventh overall pick.
That's what I said.
You just said seventh round.
I'm all upside down. Yeah, okay. First round, seventh overall pick by the New York Rangers when Jeff Gorton was there. So this is his guy. And I believe Bobrov was there. Nick Bobrov was there as well at the time when this pick happened. So both these guys, a lot of sway, a lot of pull, obviously, in the direction of what they see the team going. And they're like, yes, we want to take a flyer on this guy. It hasn't worked out. It didn't materialize very well for the kids so far. They get him in here on the cheap. Obviously, they see the untapped potential still. It's a super low risk, high reward scenario again. And I, for one, I can't see why anybody would have any beef about this. I'm curious, Vito, like, you got what your opinion is on this.
No, they're taking a flyer on him. It's a depth add. Maybe the kid finds his way and whatnot, but he's probably Laval bound for now. He did very well in the AHL last year, so yeah. Chances are he's going to head to the Laval Rocket. And listen, hopefully the Habs don't have an injury-plagued season like they did last year. And if they happen to have a season like that, then they got some depth. They can call up Elias Anderson, who can come and play in the NHL and fill in a couple spots here and there.
I think ultimately, I mean, it's just funny. I mean, again, right, and this is on the coattails of the draft, so the fan base as it stands today seems to be very like jacked up, right? Every move that the Canadians do, either acquiring depth for the AHL because they lost a plethora of players, so they have to replace them. Every signing that they do is marred with people coming out of the woodworks, still upset by what happened at the draft and taking it out on every single move that they end up doing. So it's a little bit weird. I don't know why. I mean, I do know why, I guess, but it's unfortunate that one instance of the draft has now really polarized the fan base into different camps. And that's sad to see. I mean, of course, everybody's welcome to their opinion. And I'm sure if you caught our live stream of the draft when it happened, you'll know that Vito and myself were actually quite surprised by the pick. But that isn't to say that we were taking to social medias and talking about burning down, you know, the Bell Center and going after the kid personally. In fact, right after the, you know, sort of initial shock cleared, we kept saying the same thing over and over again. This is going to be a good player for this team. He's the guy now. They made the selection.
And we said to support the team regardless of who they pick.
Well, and that's exactly it, right? So it's a little bit disheartening to see that so many people went down that road and attacked the kid personally. I don't want to speak too much about this because I believe the dust has settled a little bit from that point on. It was crappy to see. It's upsetting. I know there's some feel-good stories. There was two fans on Twitter that ended up compiling a bunch of nice tweets and nice comments that were made, and they gave the book over to Reinbacher personally. I thought that was a really sweet thing for them to do. And hopefully he understands that it's a very vocal minority that was voicing their displeasure with it. Again, wasn't the pick that I think you and I would have done. But ultimately, we don't work for the Canadians. We don't work in the NHL, period. We're a bunch of nobodies that sit at home and make comments and make a podcast about a team that we happen to cheer for. If that team goes out and selects this person, it's because they believe this person is best for their team in the long run. And so we support the decision, and we know you're getting, I mean, this is, I'm going to coin your phrase, you got the best defenseman of the draft. Now, we've gone back and forth about be it the best player, best defenseman of positions, what have you, but fundamentally, this is going to be an outstanding player for this team for many, many years to come. So diving into that now, let's talk a little bit about it. So we clearly know that David Reinbacher was picked fifth overall. So where do you see sort of the mindset behind the pick? Like run it through me. Pretend you're now explaining from the position. It's been done already. You can go find clips from the Habs themselves, but pretend, Vito, you work for the Montreal Canadiens. You were in the war room, and explain to me and everyone listening why the Canadiens picked David Reinbacher.
They got a kid that he's 18 years old and is 6'2" at 194 pounds, who's very mobile and has a very, very mature game already at the age of 18. Is he perfect right now? No, he's not. Which 18-year-old kid is perfect? They all got to figure it out. I mean, even Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews, once they got to the NHL, had to figure things out, and their game only got better. Now, I'm not comparing Reinbacher to them. It's just I'm just trying to say that even the best players in the world had to adjust. Now, with all that being said, I had him when I was looking at everything. I had him up there in my top three picks, let's say, maybe four. I just, you know, was hopeful for Will Smith, and you know that you know how I really thought that the Montreal Canadiens at a point were going to get Will Smith. That's why we put up the
taking edge four by San Jose. They could have never got him.
No, they could have never got him. So when you look at it, he's a right-handed defenseman, which right-handed defensemen who are mobile and big are scarce in the NHL. And I had read an article somewhere that the average right-hand defenseman gets paid about $450,000 more than a left-handed defenseman. Equal talent and everything. It's just that's how scarce it is. So now when you look at Montreal Canadiens, I'm trying to like put myself in their shoes. When they had somebody like David Reinbacher available to them, and everyone was saying that he's the best defenseman of that draft, and you look and say, okay, if we draft David Reinbacher and his ceiling is a top-pairing defenseman, but his floor is a top-four defenseman.
Yeah.
And if you look at the Montreal Canadiens defensive prospects, they've pretty much cemented the back end for the next 7 to 9 years. So just to go through this, you look and you say,
if they all pan out.
if they all pan out. But
I think it's fair. It's fair to say that too, because a lot of people. I don't want to interrupt you too much there, but it's a lot of people coming out saying, "Look at this. Look at the back end now. They're set for life. They are likely going to be very well off." But you cannot put your flag down and say that's it. They can make no more adjustments on the back end. They're good for the next 10 years. It makes no sense.
Nobody's saying that you can't make.
People are saying that though. What
happens is that it doesn't become a focus as much as it probably was before. You know, the Montreal Canadiens haven't had a quarterback defenseman since Andrei Markov. Some would say Subban was that guy, but I still say it's Andrei Markov. He was the quarterback. If anybody remembers Andrei Markov and the way he would quarterback a power play and do some of those streamlined passes that nobody even expected across the ice for a one-timer to players like Mike Camilleri and so on, like the Montreal Canadiens haven't had that since Andrei Markov. Now, I'm not saying Reinbacher is that guy, but Lane Hutson could be that guy. Logan Mailloux, to a certain extent, could be that guy. Montreal was clearly missing depth on the right-hand defense, okay? And all they had before drafting Reinbacher was Logan Mailloux and Justin Barron. Now they add somebody like Reinbacher, who, by all accounts, people are saying that he's a two. His ceiling is a two. Now, could some people peg him as a one depending on what your need is? And it depends what your view is of a one is. Like, some could say it could be Caden Gooley or Lane Hutson down the road. It depends what you value as a one. Do you value a shutdown defenseman who really plays an all-around game, who can control a play but at the same time block out and defensively be responsible and be one of those guys? They could be a one to some people. Some people, one to them is a quarterback guy who's going to put up 60 to 90 points as a defenseman nowadays. It all depends, right? Some might look and say, hey, number one guy to me as a defenseman could be a guy who puts up 50, 60 points, but blocks you out completely, and it becomes one of the top defensemen year in and year out. That could be a number one. Look at Charlie McAvoy, for example. Again, not comparing Reinbacher to Charlie McAvoy. His numbers are great. He puts up points, but he's not putting up Cale Makar points, but he's still a top five defenseman in the league.
Top five defenseman.
Top five to seven defenseman. Yes, he is, in my opinion.
Okay. Quick revision there. I mean, listen, I'm in agreement with you. I like the analogy about him where if he hits his ceiling, he's like a 1-2 and his floor is a top four. And if you can grab a guaranteed top four, guaranteed right-hand shot, right-side defenseman, these are rare commodities. I'm in a full agreement with that. I think given the opportunity, that's what you should always strive to go and get. I think when we look back at the draft, part of me was saying, and again, it looks like this was proven that I would have been wrong, but where my mind was before the pick was announced, if you want Reinbacher so bad, if this is your guy, and according to reports, you had five-ish offers on the table, I find it odd that out of all of the offers that were presented to him, Gorton and Hughes, that none of them fell in the, you know, 7, 8, 9 range, move back a little bit, acquire some more stuff, get some more picks, get an asset or something like this, or force that team to eat one of the contracts you're so desperate to get rid of, and then hope that Reinbacher's still there when you make the
pick. But he wasn't going to be there.
So now we come to know. Now, I didn't know this. I'm not plugged into everybody's picks of what they were going to do prior to the draft, but it would seem that Arizona, that was their guy. They sent people to go watch him over in Europe like 21 times or something, I read. So he wouldn't have gotten past 6. We now know this. Maybe the Habs kind of knew this also and knew that they couldn't take that shot, and that's why the offer for the trade to get their 5th had to be so great that they would have taken something so, oh my God, and then settled for whoever was in their second tier of picks. We know that Reinbacher was their guy from the onset. Likely, I think Will Smith probably edged him out. If he were somehow still there, they would have taken Will Smith instead, I do believe. Or if some sick reason any of the other top four guys fell, I think they would have edged out.
The only way the Montreal Canadiens were going to get Will Smith is if somehow Michkov squeezed into the top four.
Well, that's it, right? If some sort of weird thing happened, that's how that would have played out. And I think any of those guys that were taking before Reinbacher would have been ahead of him on the Canadiens depth chart when they were looking at putting the order down of the draft. I think that's just how it was. It would seem that Michkov wasn't really there. for them. They didn't like the unknowns about him. I know most fans disagree with this. That's their prerogative. They're allowed to. I don't know how many of them actually seen this kid in action, and what most people are going on is likely reports that you've been hearing that this is a generational talent and what have you. But for the most part, that's how fans get informed, right? So I see a lot of people make that argument. You didn't see him play. You don't know nothing. Most of the hype is built around these players from reports that you read from people that know, right? So you can't really attack somebody when they have an opinion about a player and it's you hit them with, yeah, but how often have you seen him play? You don't know anything about him. It doesn't work. We all fans make the same assumptions about all these players, and it's solely predicated on information that's fed to us by people that do see him. So the thing about Reinbacher was nobody was talking about him. Now that we've drafted him, you got people out there that are actually coming out saying, hold on, pump the brakes, everybody that's so upset. This is what he's really all about. And I feel like the consensus is coming to terms now saying they did draft a really good player. You can still disagree with it, but ultimately you're settling now on this is good. Think, he's not flashy, and that's the part that bothered people the most.
And he's desperate he's stable.
For the 50-goal scorer here.
He's stable. And I think what people are also upset about, some people, is that they're looking at the fact that this was a very offensive draft. It was a draft where this was the draft to go get an offensive player. And the belief is that next year is going to be very strong defensively. However, when you have the best defensive prospect available to you and right-hand defensemen are as rare as they are in the NHL, and even to acquire top pairing defensemen of that caliber, of that potential, becomes very costly, I guess they felt that they had to make that move. And they made it. Because I know some people were writing, oh, Pietrangelo, Erik Karlsson, and they were naming a bunch of defensemen that you can trade for.
Never. It would cost way too much to get
now,
those guys.
It costs way too much to get any of those guys. Those guys left their teams, went and signed for lucrative contracts, which were way too expensive, and you have to hope and pray that that player wants to come to your team. But when you draft them, we have known and I've seen that more often than not, when the Montreal Canadiens draft players, though, and they tend to stick around, provided they don't trade them themselves, they tend to stick around because they've been there from the beginning.
Yes,
we've often said, and people have often said, it's hard to attract players to come to play with Montreal. But when you draft them, they stick.
Yeah, and that's a whole culture thing again, right? Which is what they were trying to do. And that was another thing that got brought up. I mean, again, I don't know anything for certain about it, and I don't want to share misinformation, but there are reports that apparently Michkov wasn't a great guy in the room. Maybe that was another deterrent.
I'm not going to go that far. The only thing that I'll say, and Kent Hughes has even said it, the three-year contract that he signed in the KHL is made it a bit of an issue. And I strongly believe that if he didn't have that three-year contract and he was ready to come over to the next season, let's say, or even the season after, probably would have gone in the top four. Maybe not two, maybe not three, but maybe four to San Jose. The problem is the same thing that a lot of people are not factoring in. They're just seeing the player himself and saying he could be an 80 to 100 point player. Maybe he can. Maybe he can.
However, I think he will.
He's a guy that has a contract for 3 years. Now, some people are saying he's going to terminate that contract. It doesn't work. It's not that easy.
It's not that bad. It depends the team that took him. I think the perfect team.
There's something to consider there. It's 3 years. Now, in those 3 years, you're basically relying on the KHL and the development staff and basically the coaching of that team to develop this player. You're hoping that they're going to play him the full minutes and not bench him because they know that he's on his way out at some point. There's so many things. You're basically relying and hoping that their development is going to work well with Montreal. And if it doesn't, let's say it was Montreal or any other team, and if it doesn't, then he comes over 3 years later. Okay? Let's say he does come over 3 years later. Then it's maybe takes a year, maybe 2 years to adjust to North American hockey.
Or maybe it doesn't take any time at all. And maybe his development over there is perfect. We don't know.
It's a bunch of maybe. So I don't think many teams, with the exception of the Philadelphia Flyers, or eventually would have been the Washington Capitals at the latest, wanted to deal with the maybe. The worst,
and that's
there's the other angle. Even though the kid said it I want to come to the NHL as soon as possible. I want to come to the NHL as soon as possible. Okay, fine. What if in 3 years from now, he can't come to the NHL? What if he can't come to North America? There's all I'm these...
I would have rolled the dice, is my opinion about it. I would have done
it. The guy just lost... Also, I don't want to bring this up too much because rest in peace. He lost his father. And who knows what that did to his psyche at the moment, what's going on in his family and all that stuff. So there's a lot going on. But he's not coming this year.
Like, he'll have the time. And I mean, you're seeing a lot of like red flags, and it's likely that a bunch of those, or maybe all those, factored into the Canadians not taking him. It could very well be, I mean, much to the chagrin of maybe people listening that don't want to believe this, but maybe they simply just had Reinbacher higher than Michkov. Now,
maybe.
Again, I think the biggest thing at play here is you had this kid that's going to be a sure shot NHL defenseman, right-hand shot, right side. Sure shot. He's playing the NHL, this kid. Is he going to hit a ceiling? To be seen, but he's going to play and he's going to be serviceable and he's going to be good and he's going to be yours. And you're going to get him much sooner rather than later.
And you get the controls development.
But the thing, the different, and you get to control his development, of course. The thing about it is, you made me lose my train of thought here. But it was best player available for a position of need. I think that's how you look at it. Because when people talk about, do you draft best player available or draft for need? I'm always more prone to go in like best player available, right? Like you take the talent, you go after the best player. In this instance, the argument here is they didn't draft. It's not like, for example, to just come up with a scenario that they were in the mid-20s and that now it's like, whatever, there's good talents on both sides and the best player of every position has already been taken from that draft. And they decided to go, oh, we need defense. They took a defenseman, but there was clearly a much better player up front. This is the best defenseman prospect of the draft that was available to them. To take a little bit from what you were saying before, Vito, they did draft for a position of need, but they took the best player available for that position of need. And so to me, when I look at it that way, it kind of alleviates the pick a little bit. I still don't agree with it.
But it's also not a pick. It's not a pick that like most scouts had this player ranked 15th, and just because he was the best, they took him.
He was somewhere 5 to 12 or something.
Some lists had him at 4, or they were starting to say that teams were considering him at 4.
No, I think the majority had him at 8, 9, 10.
It was, no matter how you see, he was a top 8 pick.
That's a fair average. It's a fair average. They took him a little bit sooner than he probably might have been picked. But again, they had that need, and he fits that need perfectly. Now you hope that he comes over and transitions perfectly into the NHL, and he hits that ceiling. That will silence everybody. If this kid, who's still growing, is a big boy, has tremendous talent, if he hits the ceiling, this is a home run grand slam.
I don't think it'll silence everybody because there's going to be a contingent of
I mean everybody that, who's rational. Always, I mean, you're going to have people that'll be angry about this forever. Yeah, you know? Like, so, I'm not talking about the fringe.
The only way it'll silence the contingent of the fan, certain fans, sorry, that are pro Michkov is if Reinbacher does become a 1-2 and Michkov becomes a dud.
Yeah, well, yeah. I guess.
Or he doesn't live up to the 80 to 100 point hype and he becomes more of a...
Or a million... You know, listen. The difference is the draft is over. You have this kid now. This is your guy. Like you got to get behind the team. And again, you could disagree. It is perfectly acceptable to disagree with the selection and still be supportive. That is what a fan does. That's a true fan of the team. They made the pick. Get behind them. This could be their first blemish, or it could continue to be a good progression into where the plan is going with Gorton and Hughes for the team. So far, in my opinion, it's yet to be seen about the draft pick, but in my opinion, they haven't done anything bad yet. So why should we just say, oh, this, how could they? It was a shocker. Move past it. understand it now. Lots of media has come out. They've done a lot of interviews. The kid's done the development camp. If people were lucky enough to watch it, they could have seen him in the scrimmage earlier today, in fact, of this recording. He was paired with Lane Hutson, and they were doing some pretty nice stuff out there. You see the raw potential. Let it play out, and let's see what happens. So I, for one, welcome David Reinbacher to the team, and I hope he has a very, very, very successful career here with Montreal Canadiens. And so...
I think he will.
I think so. Moving also, I want to talk about, because I don't believe we discussed this either. So Alex Newhook, they made an acquisition for Alex Newhook, who's coming in. Interesting thing that was mentioned about Newhook was that they are going to give him top 6 minutes. And so if he slots on the top six, and they brought him in, and they signed Raffi Harvey-Pinard also to a 2-year deal, so he's also signed. They have so many forwards that are on this team. So before I get to the question of what do they do with them, we kind of played this game a little bit earlier, you and I, about making the lineup, like pretending now that only people can go. They're not going to get anything else in. Just with the players they have, what does the top six or the full lineup, the full top 12 look like? And so you and I have some differing opinions about this. Not dramatic, but hypothetically, if I throw this out to you, you tell me, would you be, given where they are in the rebuild, would you be comfortable icing this as your day one first game of next season? So everybody's healthy. Let's assume no one gets hurt between now and the start of the season. Everyone's healthy.
And nobody's been moved. You have your Dvorak is still there. Everybody's there.
Well, we'll play with that in a moment, because let's pretend they can't get rid of anybody, but people have to get scratched. There's simply too many of them. So we'll see who you would scratch versus who I have. So looking at the top line, I have Caulfield, Suzuki, and Doc as my first line, which I'm very happy with. I think that's a very good first line. It doesn't maybe
It's a little bit disappointing that Doc is not playing center, but we're assuming that they weren't able to trade away any players. They weren't able to trade away Dvorak. Hoffman is still on the roster, so you got to play with what you got.
That's right. So again, caveat, keeping all that in mind, there is our preferred lineup, but this is what I believe it's going to be. Newhook, Monahan, Slafkovský.
No.
Now this might not be two or two, three. Like, it's another line. So that's another line I have. Then I go RHP, Dvorak, Anderson.
No.
And then Armia, Evans, Gallagher. With Pezzetta as a scratch, Pitlick down in the AHL, and Hoffman is somewhere.
There's no way they're putting Gallagher on the fourth line. So, okay.
Where's he going to go?
Because Marty St. Louis confirmed an oppressor that their plan with Alex Newhook is to play him in the top six.
Yeah.
So the way I...
Top six. Go.
Okay. And again, Christian Dvorak is still on the team. And yes. Mike Hoffman might still be a healthy scratch.
But somewhere. That's right.
But he's somewhere, right? So you got to... I'm playing with what they got today, which is July 4th. Okay? By the time this is released, it'll be July 5th. Now... I got Caulfield on the left, Suzuki as center, Kirby Dock as the right winger.
We're in agreement. Yes.
Second line is where things differ between you and I. Okay. Is I got Slafkovský on the left, Alex Newhook as a center, and Josh Anderson as the right wing. Third line is Christian Dvorak as the winger. Sean Monahan as the center, and Brendan Gallagher as the right winger. And the reason why I'm putting Sean Monahan over Christian Dvorak in the middle is because I think they're going to want to maintain him in the center role to also maintain his value, if provided he stays healthy for trade deadline. And because depending on face-offs, if they kick out Sean Monahan out of the face-off circle, it's just put Christian Dvorak, and he's a 50% pluser anyways. Then fourth line is Harvey Pinard, Jake Evans, and Joel Armia, with Pezzetta being the extra. I don't think Harvey Pinard's going to complain about being on the fourth. He's just not that kind of guy. He's just a hard worker and he's a workhorse. And injuries happen, as you saw. And even if an injury happens to someone in the top line, which we hope he doesn't, Harvey Pinard could just move up the lineup.
Yeah, so I'm just putting yours next to mine here, just taking a peek. So again, we have the same top line. We're in agreement. You see Slaff moving to the left, which I guess is more his actual side.
Correct.
Yeah.
And Josh Anderson is a righty. He's more often than not, he's a righty.
Right. So
you know, like, he skates and he puts his shoulder down and cuts towards the left.
Yeah, I mean, Slaff on the second line on the left is perfectly fine too. You see Newhook. Well, we had to put Newhook on at least the top six because that's what they claim they're going to do. So he's your center, okay, and Anderson on the right, fine. Then you make the decision that Dvorak's going to play wing on the left. Monahan sits middle as a 3C, which is perfect for where he needs to be, and then you got Gallagher. Okay. On your right as your third line right winger, which leaves RHP again. Yes, I don't think he's going to care. I don't like it because I think that he actually elevated his game playing on a higher line.
I don't think many people are going to like it because people are going to have different combinations. I think that if the roster stays as is, now mind you, right now we got 24 players, right? Because you got Chris Weidman and Mike Hoffman in on cap friendly list on this.
Yeah.
They're scratches, but for me, I just think that there's a chance Mike Hoffman, given the what we have, if they're not able to move him, they might bury him in Laval. And there will be some savings there, not a whole lot, but there'll be some savings
there. But they I mean, obviously they have to do something, right? Simply it's just a matter of personnel. They have too many players.
They're gonna I have a feeling, and while I have no inside information, I have a feeling they're gonna have to include a draft pick of some kind to move a contract, especially if it's somebody like Mike Hoffman. They're going to have to pay to move him. They're going to have to retain salary and pay to move him just to open up the space, the roster spots for who they have.
If now, you ask Dvorak, me,
I think could be the easier trade, but teams are running out of, are running out of money right now.
Well, listen, we're only a handful of days after free agency. There's still a lot of things that can happen, but sure. If you asked my opinion, if I were to adjust my lineup the way I did it, with Dvorak being the guy out, and that they're capable of getting him sent somewhere, I don't know what, if they got to package something, which would ultimately end a terrible sort of situation that happened to what you gave to acquire him, and then what ultimately he did here, and then to have to pay to remove him. Like, you would never want to talk about that one. But if he's the one that's gone, I think players will be slotted in better spots where they'll actually sort of kind of mesh better. It's not to say that Christian Dvorak's a bad player. In fact, I think that when he's on his game, he's actually quite a serviceable third line player. I mean, I think he's actually quite good. I think he's being paid a little bit too much for what he does. He never was able to take that next step in where everybody thought he was. He's kind of maintaining equilibrium with what he was doing in Arizona, playing with like nobody. So you thought coming here, giving the opportunity to be playing a little bit more with more skilled players.
To be fair to him, ever since he got here, this team's been – it's not his fault.
Yeah,
including him. He's been injured.
Yeah,
right?
He's been injured pretty bad too.
He
yeah.
hasn't really gotten to play with better players. Not really anyway, because of all the injuries.
So let's say, to close the question, you've given your top 12. I've given my top 12. And of course, anybody, we welcome your comments to give us your top 12, what you think is going to happen. Either give it to us with the caveat of just the players that are currently on the team, or what you think maybe something that they're going to do. Maybe there's some crazy thing they're going to do and they're going to get somebody else. Maybe Jonathan Toews shows up and he's like, I've always wanted to be a half. Come on.
No,
I'm just kidding. But whatever. Give us your predictions of what you think the top 12, top six might be. And we'd be very curious to go through those. But the question is, if they do nothing now, nothing at all, and just that, with that top 12, is that something that you're comfortable with them riding into next season?
Given that we're still in a rebuild, yes.
Yeah, me too.
Given that we're still in a rebuild, yes. And barring any injuries, they will be more competitive. I would be a little surprised if they end up being a bottom five team again, but yes, it wouldn't surprise me if they're a bottom 10, 11, 12.
So that's what I was going to say. Where do you put them? Because I think, honestly, I think if they don't get injured, my prediction is that this team is going to be in the low teens is where they're going to draft. which is not a great place to be. It's not, oh my God, terrible. It's not like 19, 20. I think they could be 12 or 13, something like that. I think they're going to overachieve for where they're currently at. If players take the next step, if Doc continues the progression, if Suzuki and Caulfield take an additional step, if Newhook could find his game here, if everybody takes that, not leaps, Slafkovský, if everybody takes a step, they're 100% better than a bottom five team, and I think they're going to actually be better than the bottom 10 teams. I do.
The only thing that's going to put them behind is because everybody on in their division and everybody in these most teams in the Eastern Conference got that much better.
They're very good teams. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's where it's a bit challenging, but Montreal is on a very, very good path right now. It's going to be good to see that there's no reason for them to focus on the defensive side anymore. I still think they need to put some focus on their goaltending, for now at least. I like Monty and Allen, but there's still question marks there with Monty, whether he is a true number one. We know Dave's sentiments about that. I don't think Sammy is a... Sam Montembeau is a true number one. I would love for Kent Hughes to go and get a goaltending prospect or a goaltender in the Askarov, Levi, that category.
They could have.
Right? yeah, but not for the fifth overall pick, though.
So. I understand.
It's finding the way to get Kirby Doc to be the 2C and not put him on the right wing, even though he's doing very well as a right winger and was doing very well before he got hurt, playing with Nick Suzuki and Cole Caulfield. Everybody has to stay healthy. That's what I want. I want everybody to progress. I want to see the next level for a lot of these players, but it's staying healthy is the important part this year. And we'll see what the new therapy staff and medical staff will do with the Montreal Canadiens this year.
I mean, yes. I remember that being a story for a day. It's like only in Montreal could the new therapy guys get like top media attention. But hey, listen, if they are that good and they come in and they keep everybody healthy and everything is good, I mean, this could be a very exciting year. I mean, I'm not expecting anything. Oh my God. I'm not expecting even playoffs, to be honest with you. But they stay healthy, if they can stay healthy and they can actually show progression and everybody moves up. Again, you made a great comment to the fact that they're in a tremendously difficult division and all of the East teams are like juggernauts now. So it's going to be hard no matter what. And obviously, I don't believe that the team is stacked at the same place as these other guys in the East. So they might all, it could be that the entire team ends up elevating their game and they still don't make a lot more progress in the standings, but that would be fine. That would be fine. You give me entertaining hockey. We have storylines to follow with all the players making strides and moving and advancing and getting and showing chemistry, which is important. And then you also get another decent year of drafting at a decent level. And then who knows with all the wheels and deals that Gordon Hughes can do to maybe get more of that kind of currency leading into the next year's draft. So it's exciting. I think there's still a lot of work to be done. Clearly in this offseason, I do believe that you're going to see contracts go out. I don't know how exactly, be it that they're going to have to pay to remove them or they make some sort of unbelievable deal. We called it right we didn't even mention poor Eddie, and thanks for all the years there, Eddie, but we said he'll likely be gone for sure before free agency. And he was gone, I believe, the day of. So he's off, and now the bottom six, obviously, they don't have to jostle so much for a spot. Everybody seems to be locked in pretty good. We'll see what he can do. And that will be really interesting going to start the season with the lineup that either you or myself presented. I think either one of those, you're not going to be like, oh my God, Mike Hoffman's on the top line, or oh my God, Dvorak's your 2C. Oh my God, this is terrible. I think they got a lot of promise. We don't know if it's going to work out. We're no Notre Dame this year. We have no idea. But the pieces on the paper show that there is promise.
Did you just call them Notre Dame?
We're not Notre Dame. Nostradamus?
How do you want to call it? There you go. Nostradamus. All right. So, I'm happy that they got RHP signed for basically Rem Pitlick's contract. I know I called that.
You did?
That would be the term. I said a two-year bridge deal of $1.1 million. I just felt like it just made sense to give him Rem Pitlick's contract. The next contract that I think we're going to see is obviously Alex Newhook, and it's probably going to come in and around the Kirby Doc contract. I expect it to be somewhere around there. in my opinion. Some people might say it's too much. Some people might say that's about right. It just makes sense. He produced very similar numbers to Kirby Doc when we acquired him. Mind you, he's not the...
Important to note, I know a lot of people don't know a lot about New Hook, but it's important to note that when they acquired Kirby Doc and Doc came in here and took that next big step, New Hook's coming in here already technically ahead of where Doc was when they acquired him. They're not the same players, and you never know how it's going to materialize. I just want to throw that out there because everybody's like, oh, New Hook, why are they doing
that? Yeah, you could trade off some things. One guy won a Stanley Cup. The other one is 6'4". Like one's more of a center. The other one is a center winger, but is more likely probably better suited for the winger.
Yeah,
one's a
much faster
skater. Like, they're not identical players, but yeah, there's a lot of parallels there. There's a lot of similarities into what their situations were when they were both acquired.
That's right. Well, that's awesome. And so we're going to end it there. I think we went through a whole bunch of topics today. Main takeaways here for all of our listeners. We're curious to know what your lineup is going to be for opening night. If you want to throw that down in the comments, we'd be happy to comment back and discuss about what you think it's going to be. You can simply just agree with my lineup. You can agree with Vito's lineup or tinker and put your own. And we'd be very curious to see what everybody comes up with. On top of which, we also be curious to know about your comments. Now that it's been a few days and the dust has settled, how do you feel about David Reinbacher being picked at fifth overall? We'd like to get your takes on that as well. So eagerly looking forward to that. We're going to be back probably next week. I'm not sure if we have our reschedule with our special guest, but please keep an eye on our Twitter for all the updates on that one. We're very excited to get him on. And on that note, unless you got anything else you want to add there, Vito?
I'm good.
You're good. So for Vito, I'm Matt, and this was Get Pucked.